Hello, Simon and Mark here. This week, Ben and Nimone are putting Tyrion Lannister from Game of Thrones on the couch.
Yes, the butt of all the Lannisters' jokes, an outsider with a unique perspective and an underappreciated political genius among all the dealings in Westeros. It's going to be fascinating.
Indeed, they'd love your emails, voice notes, and anything else at shrinkthebox@sonymusic.com. Enjoy.
You are the bastard, though.
Lord Eddard Stark is my father.
And Lady Stark is not your mother, making you a bastard. Let me give you some advice, bastard. Never forget what you are. The rest of the world will not. Wear it like armor, and it can never be used to hurt you.
What the hell do you know about being a bastard?
All dwarves are bastards in their father's eyes.
It's Ben Bastard Smith here.
And Nimone Metaxas. I didn't know you were going to call yourself that. Disgust. No.
I know. Welcome. Welcome once more to the podcast that puts our favourite fictional protagonists into the therapeutic spotlight. That was Nimone you heard from there, our resident psychotherapist, here to shed some light on why these characters do the things they do. And I'll try and uncover whatever else I can uncover that's left.
You'll bring your bits.
Yeah, I'll bring my stuff. To tell us about that opening clip there.
Oh, I think that's really important. That was Tyrion Lannister, played by Peter Dinklage, talking to Jon Snow, who's Kit Harington, the actor. They both have something in common. They are both outsiders. And this is kind of at the core of Tyrion's world. It's at the core of Game of Thrones, really, but the core of certainly Tyrion's world, how he is different and other, but has learned to build a shield around himself for the most part. Although after this exchange, he kind of walks off drinking as if to drown his sorrows and distance himself from the pain of this fact, because you hear him deliver it as a sort of fact to Jon Snow. But you can, I think quite often we can feel the pain of Tyrion, and we can see how keenly he feels his difference, and we'll get into the lack of acceptance from his father and all the reasons that that might be as well. As always, I say we'd love to hear from anyone listening about the characters we're discussing, the theories that you have, the issues we're talking about. But in this episode particularly, I will refer to Tyrion as person with dwarfism and person of small stature. In the therapy room, it's always quite important to use the language a client uses to talk about themselves. Mm. So I'm going to stay as close as I can to the language that Tyrion uses to describe himself. But as always, as ever, I'm keen to hear your thoughts on anything we're covering and any experience of dwarfism, any terminology you're familiar with, which you think it would be helpful for us to use as well. So shrinkthebox@sonymusic.com.
I interviewed Peter for Serrano.
Yeah,
de Bergerac.
Of course.
And it was fascinating hearing him talk about that stuff. As I was asking him, you know, all the Serranos that have come before have had been able to put on a prosthetic nose. And he, like, that just triggered him into talking about dwarfism and what he was bringing to the role, what he carried to it, and what he carries to every role because of other people's perceptions, but also because of how he sees and understands himself. Oh, he's a fascinating dude.
And I think he has chosen roles particularly where he can challenge stereotypes.
Yeah.
And obviously, Serrano de Bergerac is one of those, as is Tyrion Lannister.
The best character for me in the show. I mean, we don't need to get into too much of the fandom around Game of Thrones as a whole, but Tyrion in particular is the best character. He's the funniest. He's got the best lines. He's the one I feel like we want the best for.
We're rooting
for him the most. When you think about it, like, there's all the constant boozing and the constant boobs. It's like constant booze, constant boobs. Even that, almost like with us, he sort of goes, "I'm tired of this." Do you know what I mean?
Like, we've raised our eyebrows. Yeah. Tyrion's doing it on the show.
Yeah, he's like our guide. Oh, I love him. All right, so coming up, we're going to look at one of the most talked about TV slaps since Moira.
Well, yeah, don't have to go very far, do we, on this show for another one of those.
In Schitt's Creek. And we're going to talk about how playing with yourself can get you out of a whole heap of bother.
You be careful how you say that.
So let's get into the character who makes us question who's a hero, who's a villain, who we really want to have power in Game of Thrones, and a reminder that there's going to be swearing. I mean, I swore on the very opening. So welcome back, guys, to another Shrink the Box. Okay, here's our mini recap. As ever, we'll only talk about the plot that directly relates to our client. So you remember King Robert Baratheon and his queen Cersei Lannister travel north to offer his old friend Ned Stark, Lord of Winterfell, the role of Hand of the King. Ned's 10-year-old son Bran discovers that Cersei and Jaime Lannister, brother and sister, are involved in this incestuous relationship. Jaime pushes Bran out the window to keep him from telling anyone. And from that, Ned figures out that Joffrey, Queen Cersei's son, is not heir to the throne, as his dad is actually his uncle. Spoiler alert. Ned is beheaded. This starts a massive war because the Stark and the Baratheons want to contest the Lannisters taking the throne. And meanwhile, another Lannister sibling, Tyrion, the black sheep of the family, who normally spends his time drinking and whoring, is now expected to become part of the battle. And whilst his father, Tywin, leads the charge, Tyrion is made a temporary Hand of the King and starts to find some purpose in life. So with all that in mind,
it's quite a lot.
This is quite a lot. Introduce us to this week's client.
I will. So male, I think we're saying 20s. We learn during the first or possibly early second series, mother died giving birth to him, which is pertinent to both the other siblings and how they treat him. Mm. He is a person with dwarfism. He calls himself dwarf. He is called Imp.
The imp.
Half man.
A lot of people call him the imp, the half man.
He is son of Tywin Lannister, brother to Cersei and Jaime, who you just mentioned in that incestuous relationship. They are all the Lannister clan. And Tyrion, who we learn later on in series two, I think, is divorced. Maybe it's series one, actually, early on.
So he married, did he marry a sex worker? I can't remember.
We'll come on to that.
All right,
I mean,
okay,
it's
we'll
used to kind of, it's used as
another thing to stick to beat him with,
absolutely.
Ridicule him.
So as you've already drawn attention to, was shown early on that Tyrion loves to drink, loves women. He's very aware of his dwarfism and he uses it as a shield. He mentions it, I think he mentions it before his detractors do, to kind of take the sting out of it, take the power out of it, of that difference, and perhaps to signal to people, you can't hurt me in that way. So don't even try it. And he deflects people's comments by using his height as a distraction. He's the first to make fun of himself in lots of ways. And we can think about that as a defense a little bit later on. And even references his height when he's being vulnerable about how his stature has affected his relationships. He is constantly alluded to being the black sheep in the family and kind of heightens our awareness of his status as the outsider in that Lannister family group. He's often referred to as the imp, as we said, or half prince, very effectively at the end of the Battle of King's Landing as half men, and the entire battalion are kind of shouting that for him. It really is a compliment in the way that he's handled the battle. Tyrion begins Game of Thrones by being overtly sexual and quite vulgar at times. He's also extremely witty and funny. And at the outset of series one, I think he comes across as a bit lost. He doesn't really have a role in the Lannister family. And Tyrion uses his privilege, as we see early on, as a rich Lannister, or the wealth of his family, to kind of make his way through the different realms in Game of Thrones, promising anyone he meets along the way gold and land. Because a Lannister
always pays his debts. Yeah.
Or her.
You know, if you're told that you are something derogatory every day, all the time, eventually you're going to see what you can do with this label. If he's coming into your office, having spent his life, you know, being called the imp, the black sheep, the one who killed their mum, what do you think might be the first thing he'd probably proposition you, wouldn't he?
I was thinking, I mean, Tyrion might be one of the characters who would come into therapy from Game of Thrones.
He's that smart.
He's self-aware enough and reflective enough. And I think you're right. I think it would be a bit of an adventure. And I certainly wouldn't rule out that a proposition might be the first thing or first overture he might make towards his therapist. I mean, he often alludes to being the black sheep of the family, feeling as though he's an outcast and not wanted by his father and his wider family, to be honest. I think that would be an area to explore in therapy with him. His kind of desire to please and be accepted by his father and his wider family. Because, of course, there is that need to belong, not feel outcast or disliked for who we are. At its most basic, the kind of danger in having to survive outside the group, and that being much harder than being kind of in the middle of it. And what can emerge sometimes is a kind of splitting within the family. So the so-called black sheep can end up holding a lot of the difficult emotions that the other family members are unable to bear. So here, shame, fear, inadequacy. I mean, we can think of that happening via projection from the other members of the family. So Cersei, Jaime, Tywin. And a kind of introjection by the so-called black sheep. So Tyrion takes all this on board. And any abuse levelled at him by the other Lannisters could potentially be another way of the other family members splitting parts off of themselves because they despise those bits.
Yeah.
Let Tyrion have that and he can be the container of those feelings. And as you said, if you're called that enough, or if the other parts of you aren't welcomed within the family, you might start believing some of what you're hearing.
Right. There is a sadness there, isn't there? For all the bluster and the wit, and he's the funniest guy in the whole of Westeros. There is this, like, he's mastered Dinklage, the actor has mastered that hangdog expression.
The pathos.
You know, and every now and again, your heart just breaks for him.
Well, of course, all of this doesn't happen in isolation, does it? Context is key. Here is a world. They are constantly at war, pretty much from the beginning of the first series.
Yeah.
Physical strength, fighting prowess, everything dominates. Tyrion's quite an easy target in that environment.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can reflect actually on how easy or safe it is to show weakness and vulnerability within the Lannister clan more widely. And that environment generally in King's Landing and Game of Thrones. So projection becomes a strong defence for the siblings onto Tyrion.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious about the feelings that might be evoked in others in his family by disability, or in this case, dwarfism. Does it remind them of a fragility? Is that how they're feeling about it?
Yeah,
vulnerability.
That's a good point. The dad is embarrassed by him being anything like a face of the family in other places.
Oh, he's kept. Kept hidden. Yeah.
Yeah, and then of course that central issue of the fact that their mum died in giving birth to him means there's so much bitterness and resentment towards him from kickoff. Really,
there's collective grief at the loss of their mother and Tywin's wife. And no one's wasted any time in giving that a focus, Tyrion. So that, I mean, he's, for them, certainly, he's the one to blame. And the fact that he's held responsible by others for killing their mother without physical difference being in the field, I mean, it'd be interesting to explore how much guilt he carries or what his feelings are about the loss of their mother. I mean, Cersei really digs the knife in during series two. Let's hear that.
It's all fallen on me.
As has Jaime repeatedly, according to Stannis Baratheon.
You're funny. You've always been funny, but none of your jokes will ever match the first one, will they? You remember, back when you ripped my mother open on your way out of her and she bled to death.
She was my mother too.
Mother gone for the sake of you. There's no bigger joke in the world than that.
I mean, Cersei really turning his humour against him. He's
horrible, isn't it?
It's awful when you're seeing it. It's quite difficult to listen to isn't it? And we might reflect together in therapy, were Tyrion to come, what it was like for him to grow up without a mother. How much space there has been for him to grieve.
I imagine very little.
Well, they're not giving, you can't hear any of it in the series, can you? He's totally blamed for the loss of mom, and you can hear it in Cersei there. And that's hard enough at the best of times, alongside a father who rejects him and a society that sees him as less than. It's a rough start in life.
Is there anything that you can speak on, or anything you can say about losing a parent in that way compared to losing a parent at, say, 7 or 8 years old, which presumably maybe Cersei or Jaime was?
I mean, I think there is a missing that happens that's reflected in the environment around you, which you will pick up on. So you might, obviously, you won't know that person. So you're not missing a person who you've met, but there is loss to be felt, and it's how that shows up for you, which will be different. Because we're talking about internal and external worlds as well, aren't we? And obviously for Tyrion, he doesn't have an external mother figure to miss, like perhaps Jaime and Cersei are older than him.
I think he's the youngest.
So then he will experience missing. He's also being told that she is greatly missed. And blamed for it.
And I suppose there will be myths and lies he can't prove or disprove.
Well, his only way of knowing her is through the people around her.
Yeah, who are awful people. So we should probably mention Charles Dance's character, Tywin Lannister, the sort of the patriarch of
He is
of the
Tyrion,
Lannisters.
Cersei,
That's not an easy
and Jaime's no Jeez. Father. And he is played brilliantly by Charles Dance.
The rumours of your demise were unfounded.
And we get a real window, I think, in the relationship between Tyrion and his father, Tywin, towards the end of series one.
Mm.
And then in episode 9, Tywin explains to Tyrion he's going to have to lead the battle. Jaime is a knight of the realm.
Yeah.
Tyrion's not
and he's
really
a swordsman.
Been on the battlefield, and he's certainly not excelled as a fighter. And he said, surely there are other ways to have me killed that would be less detrimental to the war effort.
Yeah.
I mean, he can hear how much of an outsider or how expendable he feels when he told he'd be on the front line. I mean, miraculously, he survives that battle because he's knocked over by a horse and he spends most of the battle unconscious. I mean, a typical Tyrion way. But it's a problematic relationship, that one.
And probably the most stark, excuse the pun, the most stark example of the rejection that Tyrion feels. Like, his dad has just got no time for him at all, not even a kind word, you know. Jaime might, you know, sugarcoat things slightly. His dad's got no interest in doing that whatsoever. But for somebody who's felt all of this rejection and hate and disgust at his very existence, how is Tyrion like the most affable and reasonable character? He's a great diplomat. He becomes a great diplomat.
And finally, that kind of all of that pays off because Tyrion, you can see the pride that he feels when he's asked to act as Hand of the King, because eventually,
by his dad,
his father does see him and reward him. I'm thinking of Hand of the King as right-hand man, spin doctor, special advisor. Would you?
Yeah.
Because like I think it's not a term that we...
And the mafia.
Yeah. So whilst his father is to be otherwise engaged fighting Robb Stark's growing army and Jaime is captured by the Starks, Tyrion has to grow into this role and responsibility. And he even declares that he enjoys this. I'm good at this. It's like he's found his calling.
I'm good at this.
Very well done. And it is a role of wheeling and dealing and basically saving Joffrey's ass. By episode 10, we see the potential for them to have a closer bond, definitely. I think as Tywin realises Tyrion's potential, there's a moment even where you do see Charles Dance, I think, plays it well. It sort of softens slightly towards Tyrion.
Yeah.
And there's pride for Tyrion about being back in the inner circle of his family. It's kind of cemented at the start of season two.
Your father has named Lord Tyrion to serve as hand in his stead while he fights.
Out! All of you, out! I would like to know how you tricked father into this.
If I were capable of tricking father, I'd be emperor of the world by now. You brought this on yourself.
I've done nothing.
Quite right, you did nothing. When your son called for Ned Stark's head. Now the entire North has risen up against us.
I tried to stop it.
Did you? You failed. That bit of theater will haunt our family for a generation.
Robb Stark is a child.
Who's won every battle he's fought? Do you understand we're losing the war?
What do you know about warfare?
Nothing. But I know people. And I know that our enemies hate each other almost as much as they hate us.
Yeah, that's the rub of it, isn't it? He's totally willing to admit he knows nothing about these things that they take so much pride in, like how many people they killed, the land that they've stolen. He doesn't know. It's not in his wheelhouse.
But he's also happy to be the bad object. Like, he knows they are hated. And he kind of, he's using that. Whereas I think Cersei would like to live in some world where she doesn't see
And she's worshipped even by the people that she's enslaved or like, she committed genocide against. Do you know what I mean? She's got that image of the queen.
He's definitely had to negotiate others around him and move in a different way. You're absolutely right. He just hasn't had that power. And so he's had to kind of work the environment and the family landscape, if you like, in a different way. And understanding people is his great strength. He's gone from disappointing child to hand of the king in place of his father. And there, as we heard, Cersei's messed up. Will that be the end of her? She'll be back.
Absolutely. Let's dig into a little bit more how Tyrion has been treated so profoundly differently to his siblings.
It's difference in all its many guises here, isn't it? And we see how his difference and the way in which he's had to navigate his environment differently to his siblings has kind of led him to be empathetic to those considered to be differently abled to him. So we also see what it's like to be around disability, if that's a word that they might use in the Lannister family. I mean, I really feel like there's a medieval era mentality to difference and gender and sexuality.
Yeah,
not sex per se, but certainly sexuality. This is the backdrop to how we're kind of thinking about
difference. And then along comes someone with dwarfism. It's like...
I think we see the empathy that Tyrion feels for others again, when the Stark's son, Bran, who's lost his legs having been pushed from the tower by Jaime, that empathy feels immediate with what's happened to Bran.
Do you like to ride, Bran?
Yes. Well, I mean, I did like to.
The boy has lost the use of his legs.
What of it? With the right horse and saddle, even a cripple can ride.
I'm not a cripple.
Then I'm not a dwarf. My father will rejoice to hear it. I have a gift for you. Give that to your saddler. He'll provide the rest. You must shape the horse to the rider. Start with a yearling and teach it to respond to the reins and to the boy's voice.
Will I really be able to ride?
You will. On horseback, you'll be as tall as any of them.
Is this some kind of trick? Why do you want to help him?
I have a tender spot in my heart for cripples, bastards, and broken things.
It's really interesting hearing that.
Tyrion is like, you've got to shape the horse to the rider.
Yeah.
You can hear that.
That's future thinking.
How he's thinking differently. I wanted to say that Tyrion's height and his feeling about his stature would only come into the therapy room explicitly if he brought it.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not sure it's necessarily the first thing he'd talk about.
No,
we might get curious about his experience of the world, his awareness of his own experience. And then we may talk about how it is for him to navigate the world and the environment and the expectations and how he meets them or not, which might get us into that territory and whether he feels accepted or not. So it's really, it would start from his own feelings about difference and how society might find him unacceptable. That we would reflect on. Because, I mean, often he is wielding his difference as a superpower. And it kind of demonstrates the clip, what we've been talking about, demonstrates the complex landscape and how we might be exploring that in a therapeutic relationship all at the same time. We're working with the intrapsychic. So that's within your own head, how you might be viewing the world from within. So, you know, we've talked about object relations and how you make sense of the world. That's your intrapsychic world. We'd be thinking about the interpersonal that happens outside and at the same time the kind of societal, socio-environmental. But in Tyrion's case, we might be thinking about how society views those with a particular difference. And then also as a therapist or therapists, how we might inadvertently bring unhelpful societal views or responses into the room, because you'd also, as ever, you're kind of looking out for counter-transference. And I talked before about how useful it is to know some of your stuff, your own judgments that you make about the world, and to be able to include those in the space.
And so I suppose to not fear getting it wrong must be quite important.
Exactly that. The kind of shame that might come with the idea of getting it wrong. It's like getting it wrong is part of perhaps finally meeting somebody. I mean, outside of the Game of Thrones world, there's a dominant Western world medical model, which kind of infers that someone with a disability, in this case dwarfism, might have something wrong with them. Certainly in the past, that was sort of what we've referred to here as well as less than. And therefore, they might need to go through a process of loss adjustment or acceptance, because that's what they're calling the norm. And obviously, this is different from it. And the focus on the person with disability being fixed or encouraged to fit into the non-disabled world. So this is what Tyrion's kind of referring to as, you've got to fit the horse to the rider.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to be bound by what you think is possible because you're sitting there looking at Bran now thinking he can't possibly ride a horse. He doesn't have the use of his legs. Tyrion's looked at it in a completely different way.
But he does actually use actual violence himself sometimes. I mean, I teased it earlier. We got to talk about the slap.
Okay.
Because in episode 2, he slaps his nephew / brother
Joffrey. Can you find your family tree in Game of Thrones?
Slaps Joffrey around the face in probably the first moment that got me sort of like out of my seat cheering watching Game of Thrones, because Joffrey's so insufferable. So he's the heir to the throne. He slaps him for not being compassionate enough to Lady Stark, whose son Bran is in the coma that we referenced earlier.
Tyrion's the only one in the Lannister clan who is most overtly prepared to call out Joffrey to try and mitigate and calm what we might call his sociopathic nature. But just generally, as he said, he's an insufferable character. He doesn't really, you don't sense that he's had many boundaries put in for him. And he is lauded as this king figure. You know, he's heir to the throne while Robert Baratheon's still around. He then becomes king, which is a terrifying prospect.
And Cersei sort of worships the ground he walks on, throws rose petals down at his feet. And Tyrion slaps him in his face 3 times.
And I love that Joffrey says you can't. And Tyrion evidently is like, that doesn't bother me in the slightest. She's my sister. I mean, I also feel it might have something to do with him feeling more powerful, older and more experienced than Joffrey. But he, like you say, it's good uncling. He's trying to lay down some framework by which Joffrey can see how what might be expected of him, certainly if he's going to take on the role of king.
In this kind of a world where fighting and winning, that means power, right? His approach is so different. He's got to be comfortable with being this outsider in its entirety, because no matter how powerful he gets, that's never going to change.
I mean, do you mean that he's not going to be fighting in the knightly way that Jaime is?
No, I think deep down he knows that will never happen.
And here we're back to the landscape, aren't we? And we're looking at it, the societal expectation of a king. Because if we look at other skills that Tyrion certainly practices and manages to enhance is something like reading, or, you know, he's much more knowledgeable than either of his siblings.
Reading and travel. Yeah. He's met so many different types of people. He's not only a good judge of character, he also is not a judge. You know what I mean? He's not someone who's going to judge you based on this one thing. So kings have to be kingly. They have to have this blood on their hands. And queens have to be equally merciless. You know, maybe they're not on the battlefield, but when they are queen, they're going to have to chop some heads off. And his approach of, like, what happens if you understand the person? Couldn't you have even more power than just, like, oh, fear me?
You really see that in series two when he becomes, he's handed the king, and he's slowly revealing just how powerful he can be as he becomes more adept at the wheeling and dealing that's necessary for that role. I mean, in court, as an example, when he's merciless at sniffing out a mole at the Small King's Council, offering all the members of the Small King's Council a chance to marry off the Queen's only daughter, but don't tell the Queen. So, I mean, as
he's
a viewer...
He's in everyone's ear, isn't he? It's
yeah,
great.
As a viewer, the penny finally drops that, oh, well, she can't be married to all those people. Yeah. There's something else going on here. And it's Tyrion knowing full well that he will sniff out the mole, because that person will go straight back to the Queen.
Of course.
And Cersei will be on him, which is in fact how it pans out.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's had to develop other skills, his wit, his intelligence, his charm, his cunning, his ruthlessness, his ability to shock. He does all of those in abundance. But it's survival for Tyrion. He's realised that's how he's going to survive, and probably how he's survived into adulthood. So it feels like, again, these are his superpowers.
His arc is the most rewarding for us, as we said right at the start. You're waving his flag, man. Okay, well, after the break, let's look at Tyrion's vulnerability and why he has more empathy than the rest of the Lannisters put together, multi-generational. So we'll see you after these messages, unless you're a shrinker, of course, or a subscriber to The Take, in which case, no ads. Boom. We are back.
The filth.
So it's a big part of Tyrion's persona, isn't it?
The brashness. I mean, our first meeting with Tyrion in episode one, we see him drinking in a brothel.
Okay.
The whole first episode is littered with sexual innuendos from him, being sexually overt at every opportunity. Mm-hmm. Tyrion seems to debase himself a lot like that, and also seeks out lots of one-on-one company, which feels like it's almost therapeutic in a way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he does that with the sex workers he meets, the one sex worker, actually, the one he falls in love with, and with Bronn, who he travels with, and
of
who
course,
obviously
yeah.
he's kind of... I mean, the beginning of that relationship is lovely, and I referenced it earlier, where basically he sort of asks for someone to stand up for him, and Bronn is the one who steps in, and their relationship is kind of wonderful to look at. And this seems to give him confidence while he's away from his family and allow him to grow into himself. Do you know, it kind of got me thinking about impotence. Game of Thrones, real men are warriors, fighters, physically strong.
Yes.
So I imagine bedding women was part of the image of strength and virility.
Yeah, big time.
And we could get curious if Tyrion's use of language is about emphasising his virility to others and compensating for perhaps the feeling of being less than physically. And part of his overall bravado, another part of his shield.
The Queen has two brothers.
There's the pretty one. And there's the clever one.
I hear they call him the imp.
I hear he hates that nickname.
Oh, I hear he's more than earned it. I hear he's a drunken little lecher, prone to all manner of perversions.
Clever girl.
We've been expecting you, Lord Tyrion.
So is it like the sort of Princess Margaret deal where she feels like she's got nothing to do, so she might as well just be a hedonist?
He is a bit lost at this stage. So what else is there for him to do but to play up the idea of being a rich, provocative Lannister who can fashion you with gold at every turn?
Because he's never going to be given a job in his eyes of any real worth.
In his view, exactly, that's where he's headed, because Cersei is queen. Jaime is knight. Mm-hmm. Where do I fit in?
Yeah.
As the kind of
Tywin's Tywin.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would also be good to reflect to Tyrion his experience of the effect of his language on people and how he feels about his vulgarity. Because again, it would only come into the therapy, really, his use of language, if he brought it up. Because it also might keep people at a distance.
Yeah.
And I think it's problematic if people are avoiding you or you're having trouble making lasting relationships, which we might think with Tyrion, although we do see him eventually fall in love.
Yeah, and he's been in love before.
And then if you feel like once he's been given the job as King's Hand by his father and he's fallen for his new love, I get the impression he's more respectful of the women around him.
Yeah.
Certainly that feels like it belongs at the beginning of series one. What do you think?
Yeah, it could be that he wants to shock people and by turns make them laugh. And that's his way of feeling this sense of belonging. Like in episode 6 in the first series, he escapes being put to death because he just makes a mockery of the trial by confessing his sins. So he sets everybody up to hear that he's, you know, committed this heinous crime. But when he lists the sins... I mean, it's classic. It's a classic GOT moment, I think.
When I was 7, I saw a servant girl bathing in the river. I stole her robe and she was forced to return to the castle, naked and in tears. If I closed my eyes, I could still see her tits bouncing.
And that's not the half of that speech, really.
No, that speech is incredible.
It's one of those moments, if you're watching along with us and you haven't reached that bit yet, wait for that. And if you have, I think you'll know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. And of course, it's a very, it's where we can see Tyrion use his humour to great effect.
And with an audience, it's perfect. A whole court.
Performing.
It's just, that's his dream role. We're going to talk a bit more about his sense of humour, actually, after some words from a sponsor. And unless you're a shrinker, of course, in which case, hold the line, caller. We'll be back very soon. It's us again. It's Ben and Nimone talking about Tyrion, and we were saying before the ads there about him being this, you know, naturally funny and empathetic human being. Again, so different from his siblings and almost anybody else in Westeros, really.
There's not another character like, I think Varys comes close in a
yeah. And, you know, I think you feel for Jon Snow, but because he knows nothing, so he's hard to get close to.
Not as witty as Tyrion. I mean, maybe the
wit is not really his bag.
A lot of Tyrion's humour is based around his drinking or being self-depreciating and using humour to break tension, of course, or using humour as a diversion to save his skin.
Yeah.
I am Tyrion, son of Tywin of Clan Lannister.
How would you like to die, Tyrion, son of Tywin?
In my own bed, at the age of 80? With a belly full of wine and a girl's mouth around my...
My parents are going to be listening to the show. Tyrion, I mean, he does like to mesh funny and vulgar. Again, we might be exploring this use of humour because, as you said, he might come in and proposition a therapist. He would almost certainly be using humour probably to keep people at a distance. Or to avoid going to more vulnerable places. Fairly obviously, that's how he's used his humour. It's not about saying that we can't be humorous, but certainly noticing with people when they're funny, but there's something that is funny necessarily, it can be quite revealing because the humour doesn't match the emotion. And that might be something that would be useful to think about with someone, because it then does point to, what am I finding difficult to get close to here?
What is the thing with Tyrion? Why is he holding
the pain, the suffering, the outsiderness, the feeling that he doesn't belong?
It's a combination of all of these things.
Yeah.
Also, he's been a victim of shit humour. So if you think back to the situation, we see him fall in love with Shay.
This is the sex worker.
But this has happened before, but it was part of an elaborate ruse that his brother was involved in because they thought it was funny.
But again, I have this sense that relates to the projection of you can hold all the bad stuff for us and only it increases the othering that happens around Tyrion, because it's safer than coming face to face with your own vulnerability.
First, my father had Jaime tell me the truth. Girl was a, you see. Jaime had arranged the whole thing.
The road, the rapers, all of it. He thought it was time I had a woman. But after my brother confessed, my father brought in my wife and gave her to his guards.
He paid her well. Silver for each man. How many whores command that kind of price?
He brought me into the barracks and made me watch. By the end, she had so much silver that the coins were slipping through her fingers and rolling onto the floor.
I find some of those more misogynistic moments really difficult to listen to.
Mm.
And you can really hear the cruelty wielded by his family. In the name of, well, we thought that you should come of age or that you should have a woman or that you should find a part of yourself.
I think it was just like an extreme version of what I imagine they were doing to him from when he was a lot younger than 16.
I mean, it's really revealing about how he's the way that he is, how he's been treated, maltreated. Says more about his family constellation, what it might take to survive within the Lannister family.
Can you define family constellation?
We probably need a whole program and we might do a constellation with the family. But I think, to say briefly, is where he fits into the family and how people are constellated around you in your family environment. So you might work with people to see what it feels like to where you might place the other family members in a room around you in terms of how close you feel to them, whether they're facing you, turning away,
right,
and therefore how the where you are in relation to the rest of your family members. And it can be quite emotive to think about that in that way. Does that explain?
Yeah, it does. It does. And I'd never heard that phrase before, but that's very interesting.
So how does it feel
to be? The dynamics within a family, even if you all live in the same house.
And what it feels like to be the third of three children, to have lost their mother birthing him, what it feels like to be in the presence of his father.
Yeah.
And where he'd place his siblings in relation to his father. All of that. I mean, that sense of where he is in the family is underlined again, in series two. Cersei is furious with him, sending her only daughter off to secure more ships.
Oh, yeah.
For the Lannister army to defend King's Landing. And she knows the way to hurt Tyrion is to hurt those he loves, which I guess they found out with the awful joke they played on him that we've just heard.
Mm-hmm. He is completely surrounded by people who either hate him, ridicule him, wish him harm, or just don't want anything good to happen for him, which is kind of why Shay, the sex worker we mentioned before, is so important for him. Like, he's building something with her, even though I think he's smart enough to know there's a day's gonna come where he's gonna have to leave her or be cruel in some way.
Well, we know that she was initially, Tywin told him not to take her to King's Landing, and Tyrion completely just shuns that idea because he is falling in love with her, but he does have to keep her hidden. So I think you're right. He said, and this is where it feels really difficult because it doesn't feel like that has any life in it or longevity.
And that must be, for him being a deep thinker, it must feel like a metaphor for his entire life, that there's no point in trying to seek the happiness that every human being should have the right to, because it's going to be taken away from him horribly in the way that it always has, because he's this freak of nature that doesn't belong anymore.
Well, Shay really sees him.
Yeah, she does.
She?
Yeah, yeah,
And she offers him a way out.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting to reflect with Tyrion why he chooses to stay in King's Landing, because she says, let's just run away. Let's go to the beach, hang out. And you can kind of imagine Tyrion sort of living that life. We sort of see him in that carefree way at the beginning of series one. But by the time he's been Hand of the King and had a bit more of that taste of power and found a role for himself within the family, he can't leave. So it's a real push-pull for him. And that would need some reflecting on, and I suppose his feelings about that to be expressed.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'd end up in an either-or thinking kind of patterns, which can blind people to the other possibilities. It's much more nuanced. We see the impact of having to keep his true love hidden, that sort of push-pull. I mean, I say it as love for his family, but he desperately wants their acceptance and to feel something differently. And I suppose we could get curious with him about what it's like that that's not forthcoming in the way that he'd like, and how there might be disappointment around that. I imagine a complete adventure with Tyrion.
It would be
shock tactics, charm, wit, initially protecting his vulnerability and pain, and then his ability to reflect kicking in. Be amazing to see what would be possible.
Yeah.
So who are we looking forward to next week?
It's another episode of Shrink the Inbox.
Oh, wicked.
We have got a show that's full of surprises.
We want to hear your theories as well. We don't hold all the cards. shrinkthebox@sonymusic.com. We'd be stoked if you could follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you prefer to get your pods. Get all the new apps, any you've missed, spread the word so we can make more of these. Send a link to your mates, ask them to follow, leave us a review if you want. I'm not going to order you around. Or here's another option. If you want to be a shrinker, that's what we're calling you guys, yeah? I hope you like that. To get Shrink the Box without the ads, you just subscribe to Extra Takes, because then you get the ad-free episodes from Kermit and Mayo's Take and access to all their weekly extra episodes as well. You can start a free trial by clicking try free at the top of the Shrink the Box show page on Apple Podcasts or by visiting extratakes.com.
Can we, as ever, say thank you to our production team, production management, Lily Hambly, the assistant producer, Scarlett O'Malley, studio engineers, Matthias Torres-Solo, the mix engineer, Josh Gibbs, senior producer, Selena Ream, and executive producer is Simon Poole.
All right, well, until then.
See you then.
Ta-da.